Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the 1 Samuel 8 story right after this. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, there's a short chapter. You can read it in probably 10 or 15 minutes. It's about, well, let me just look at it here. I'll tell you how many verses. I think there's 20 or 21, something like that. 22 verses. It is a story about the people of Israel. That's for you white Anglo-Saxons out there, you know, you Englishmen and you Scotsmen and Irishmen and Frenchmen and so on. You Canadians, it's the story of our people in ancient times giving our God the finger because we hated him. Here in the United States, 65% of people go to church every week. 65%. Now in Italy, it's only 9%, and most of you Italians over there now are Catholics, and only 9% of you people go to church every week. We Americans are pretty religious people. Now, we hate God. I mean, we despise that sucker like there's no tomorrow, as evidenced by our, you will know them by their fruits. You know, it isn't what we say. We're running around knocking on each other's doors, asking each other, do you know Jesus? But when it comes right down to it, we really hate that guy. We don't like him at all, and we don't do anything that he tells us to do. And it's kind of a bizarre set of circumstances that that's the case. Now, when you tell people that, it really turns them off. They get mad as hell, you know, and they say, I do not hate Jesus. I love Jesus. I have Jesus in my heart. Oh, the hell you belter. Let's just test that and see whether or not that's really true. And I thought the place to start is to go back in history to our forefathers, you know, way, way back. If there was ever a group of people that should have been real happy, real satisfied, and real grateful to the creator of the universe, it would be our forefathers, because we were in slavery in Egypt, you know, kind of like you black people out there, you know, you're always bitching about slavery. Okay, well, we were in slavery too, you know, you're not the only slaves. We had a little stint, a little bout with slavery for about 413 years, as a matter of fact, according to the scripture. So the Egyptians weren't treating us too good. And so God sent a guy by the name of Moses over. You can hear this story, you know, it's in Exodus 1 through about Exodus 10 or 12, you know. And so in the final analysis, when you get through with the 10 plagues, Pharaoh said, you know, pack up, get out, and we left. Now, here we are, we're out in the wilderness, and about 3.5 million of us, and we're eating manna. God's feeding us with manna, and, you know, things are going along pretty good. And so one day, we're over here in Deuteronomy chapter 9. And there's 7 examples here in Deuteronomy 9 where we're all giving God the finger. And we wouldn't do a damn thing he said. I mean, if he told us to stand up, we'd sit down. If he told us to come here, we would run there. And he said of us, he said in verse 6, this is Deuteronomy 9, verse 6, he said, understand, therefore, that the Eternal your God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, because you are a stiff-necked people. He said, you're a stiff-necked people. In verse 7, he said, remember and forget not how you provoked the Eternal your God to wrath in the wilderness from the day that you departed out of the land of Egypt until you came into this place. You have been rebellious against the Eternal. And also at Horeb, you provoked the Eternal to wrath so that the Eternal was angry with you to have destroyed you. And when I was gone up into the mount to receive the tables of stone, even the tables of the covenant, which the Lord made, and the Eternal said unto me, Arise, get you down quickly from hence, because the people which you have brought forth out of Egypt have corrupted themselves and are quickly turned aside out of the way which I commanded them, and they have made them a molten calf. And then furthermore, the Eternal spoke unto me, saying, I have seen this people, and behold, they're a stiff-necked bunch. And let me alone, that I may destroy them and blot out their name from under heaven, and I'll make of thee a great nation, mightier and greater than thou. So here's Moses. He's sitting there, you know, and he's reminding these people. He says, now, do you remember in the wilderness and at Horeb and up at Mount Sinai? And how you provoked God to anger. And he said to me, get out of the way, Moses, and I'll just kill all these fools, and I'll make of you a great nation. Now, let me tell you, boys and girls, that if God had made me that offer, this is little Georgie Gordon now, and if I was Moses, and if he had said to me, now, little Georgie, get out of the road, and I'm going to consume all of these Canadians and Americans and Frenchmen and Scotsmen, and then I'm going to make of you a great nation. Do you know what I would say? I'd say, God, let me move over out of the way. Let me watch you destroy all these nuts and all these fruitcakes. That's what I would say. I'd say, hey, let me help you. Moses didn't do that. And that's good for you and it's good for me because, you know, my great-great-granddaddy 84 generations back was standing out there with Moses giving God the finger and calling for the people to stone Moses. That was my great-great-great-great-granddaddy long, long ago. He didn't like Moses either. So Moses interceded for the people on numerous occasions, not just once or twice, but several times God was going to kill them all. The relationship between the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, from the time that he took them out of Egypt until this date in 2010 AD, has not been a good relationship. Has not been a good relationship. Now, it isn't that God hasn't tried his best. It's that every time he does, we give him the finger and tell him to kiss off. And so he's been putting up with this for a long time. Now, as these events come up and we give him the finger, then he punishes us, and then we give him the finger, and then he punishes us, and we give him the finger, and this has been going on now for about 3,000 years. And he's been telling us for a long time now, about 3,000 years. He said, you know, I'm getting a belly full of you, and then there's going to be an ass-kicking coming that's going to top all ass-kickings. And it's called the Great Tribulation. So if you've got a pen and paper out there, boys and girls, write this down. I'll tell you where you can read about this. I didn't write this. I'm not that smart. You don't need to give me any credit at all. And this God over here, I don't need to tell you what he said. You can read it for yourself. You can get it right out of the horse's mouth. Right out of the horse's mouth. I'll tell you a little story here. There's a guy called up here at the law school one day, and he wanted to talk to me. And not everybody can just call up here and talk to me. I'm kind of like President Obama. Just because you call the White House and ask for Barack doesn't mean that you're going to get Barack. And just because you call here and say you want to talk to little Georgie doesn't mean that you're going to get to talk to little Georgie. But anyway, this guy called up, and he got hold of my wife. Now, my wife's a pretty good old heifer, and I kind of like her. And she's got some pretty good lines. Well, anyway, she tried to be nice to this guy. She said, now, Mr. Gordon is tied up right now. And what that means is that you can't talk to him. It means I'm tied up. That means that I'm watching TV, you know, or I'm doing something, you know. But anyway, he said, I don't want to talk to you. I want to get this right from the horse's mouth. That's what he said to my wife. I want to get this right from the horse's mouth. And my wife said, well, you are talking to the horse's ass, and that's as far up this horse as you're going to get today. Now, may I help you? And that old boy, he hung up. He was a little bummed out, and he ain't called back since. And I guess we lost that sale. But I just wanted to point out to you, my wife, she's kind of a stiff-necked Israelite, just like our forefathers were. She's just kind of like a John Wayne toilet paper, you know. It's rough and it's tough and it doesn't take any SH off anybody. Well, this God over here, now this isn't sweet Jesus now that I'm preaching to you. I just want to tell you about this God over here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, which is where we're going. That's today's topic. That's what we wanted to talk about. But I wanted to introduce you to the bitch that's going on here. We got a 3,000-year-old bitch between our God and us. And we don't like him. But now he doesn't share that. He really likes us, and he's got a plan in mind. He's got an agenda. And he thinks that he can straighten us out. That's his think. That's his take on it. He says, I'm going to straighten you guys out. When I get through with you guys over there, and I think that I'm going to have you straightened out. Now, he's been putting up with this now for 3,000 years. And copy this down now. You got your pen out there. It's Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26. There's two penal clause chapters there. Two. Leviticus chapter 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. Now, I'm just reading to you here. This is Deuteronomy chapter 9, where he says, you know, seven times here in the wilderness, Horeb, Mount Sinai, Taberah, Massa, Kibroth, Kadesh Barnea, 1 Samuel 8, and Numbers chapter 16 with Korah's rebellion. Now there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's nine. Nine confrontations where every time this comes up, there are some people that get killed. There's death every time we have one of these confrontations. And this Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 are not exceptions to that rule. There is going to be weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth. There's going to be a bloodbath come out of this. This is not going to be good. So I just wanted to report that to you. Not that I'm trying to get you to give your heart to Jesus or send your tithes to George Gordon's law school. You don't have to send any money. You don't have to do anything. You don't even have to listen. Hell, if this makes you mad, just turn the dial and go listen to some acid rock. You know, do something constructive. But meanwhile, back on the farm over here, in Deuteronomy chapter, I think it's 7, is it? Is it chapter 7, 8? Let me see if I can find it here. Maybe it's 10. Oh, no. Chapter 7, verse 10. Now, listen to this. And he says, know therefore, in verse 9, this is Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 9. Now, listen up. He says, know therefore that the eternal your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. Now, people that love him and keep his commandments, and he's got a little buzzword in here, for this is the love of God that we keep his commandments. You'll see that in 1 John 2, verses 3 and 4, I believe it is, something like that. Okay, so the buzzword, if you wanted to co-plead this out, if you want to know what love was, well, love is the keeping of the commandments. So now, you know, it kind of makes sense. My dad had kind of a similar view. He said, you have to make your bed, take out the garbage, feed the dog, mow the grass. And then if you love me, keep my commandments. And if you don't, it's going to hurt real bad when I get home. My dad was just like this God here. He had the same view. He wanted you to follow instructions. In verse 10, he says, and repayeth them that hate him to their face to destroy them. And he will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. So now all of us Americans and Britons and all of us, you know, Irishmen and Scotchmen and Icelanders and Canadians and Australians, we're about to meet God. And it's called the Great Tribulation. He says he's going to pay us to our face. Now, if there was ever a time that you'd want to think about maybe we better stop giving this guy the finger. Maybe we better shut up and go feed the dog. Maybe we better go in the garage and get the lawnmower out and mow the grass. Just a thought. I just want to throw that out there for your consideration. There might be a reason now at this last ditch, great tribulation time, the end of the age, when we might actually want to sit down, shut up, fold our hands, and do what we're told. Because remember, now he says, I'm going to pay you guys to your face now. You've been giving me the finger. You've been screwing off here for a long time, but you know there's an end coming to that. All right. Now, with that much in mind, let's flip over here to the subject matter at hand. It's 1 Samuel chapter 8. This is a geopolitical event. It is the turning point in Anglo-Saxon history. This is the single most eventful, most important political event that has ever happened in the history of our people. This is it. And it's a short story. Just take me a minute to read it to you, and then we'll go through it, and I'll just make a few comments, and then we can quit and go home. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 1, it says, it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now, the name of his firstborn was Joel. The name of his second, Abiah. They were judges in Beersheba. And his sons walked not in his ways. But they turned aside after lucre, and they took bribes, and they perverted judgment. Hell, they had a government just like ours. They had lobbyists that were paying campaign contributions to Samuel's two boys. No doubt they were getting some political favors for it. Now, that was wrong, and it was against the law, and they weren't supposed to do that, but, you know, boys will be boys. Then all of the elders of Israel gathered themselves together, and they came to Samuel unto Ramoth, and they said unto him, well, behold, you're old, and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. So they came to Samuel, and they said, hey, listen, we got political corruption going on here. We want a change. We want a new administration. That's what we said over here in America back in 2008. We said, we're tired of these Republicans and all the graft and corruption going on here. We want a change. We want Barack Obama. And now the people got Barack Obama, and they're disappointed with Barack, and now they want a change, and now we're going to go back to Team A. The Republicans over here, that's Team A, and then the Democrats are Team B. And we switch back and forth from one corrupt team to the next. It has never occurred to us to throw both of these guys out and bring in Team C. We've never done that here. I'll just throw that out there. It might be a wild new idea for you. You know, instead of voting for Team A, Team B, vote for Team C. So the people said, hey, now we don't want you, and we don't want your boys. We want a king like all the nations. Now, these people had a king. It was God Almighty himself. These people were in a unique position. They had the creator of the universe as their king. And all of a sudden, they said, hey, we don't like you. We want a real king. We want some guy we can see, you know, some guy that can have a ticker tape parade and, you know, we can pay taxes to and, you know, maybe have a fight with the neighbors every once in a while and call it a war and see if we can't take some booty. And in verse 6, the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us, and Samuel prayed unto the Eternal. Now the Eternal said unto Samuel, well, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, because they have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. That's it, right there. That is the most significant geopolitical event in the history of the world. But boy, that's the biggest geopolitical event that ever happened in our history or in our nation. We told God Almighty himself to take a hike. Can you believe that? Now listen, the Japanese have never done that. The Muslims don't do that. The Arabs don't do that. The Buddhists don't do that. The Confucianists don't do that. Those people, they stick with their gods through hell and high water. It's only the Israelites that tell the creator of the universe, kiss off, we ain't having anything to do with you. We want to bring in, we like these gods. We like the Japanese gods and the Buddha gods, and we like the Greek gods and Roman gods, and we're just kind of enamored by all these gods. And we were told not to do that, you know, and we were given a law and told that we were a peculiar people. And God told us, he said, I want you to be a peculiar treasure to me. And we said, no, we just want to be garden variety, everyday, ordinary, like everybody else. We do not want to be peculiar. In verse 8, he says, now according to all of the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Hey, listen, we've got our Washington Monument, and we've got our Statue of Liberty, and we've got Christmas, Easter, and New Year's. We have our 476 churches that we can go to so the 65% of us can pray and worship false gods and idols and do it in the name of Jesus. Now, we Americans over here, and I kind of suspect that you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders are right into this with us, but let's listen to this. Are you practicing integration Christmas, eating pork, practicing Easter, interracial marriage, unjust weights and balances, that's paper money, practicing witchcraft, sodomy, abortion, adultery, usury, and vote? Vote? Hey, we got a big election coming up here. You people voting, did you know that violates Exodus 20, verse 3? Usury violates Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. Adultery violates Exodus 20, verse 14. Abortion violates Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. Sodomy violates Leviticus 20, verse 13. Witchcraft, and, you know, I mean, I could sit here and preach a sermon. Hell, I'm a plumber. Wake up. I'm not out here preaching you a sermon. I just wanted to point out that we got some politics and law. We got some legal problems over here coming down on us. Legal problems. Now, here's what the legal problem is. If you'll flip over here to Exodus chapter 19, verse 16, and you start reading there until you get over here to Exodus 24, verse 8. Write that down. That's called the Old Covenant. That's the contract. And in verse 8 of this Exodus 19, 16 through Exodus 24, 8. Listen to them as they say down at the Blue Room. And he took the book of the covenant and he read it in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Eternal has said we will do and be obedient. So Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Eternal has made with you concerning all these words. We got a contract. Under the terms and conditions of that contract, we agreed that we would perform on that contract. Then we didn't perform on the contract. As a result of that, we are out of compliance. We are in breach of contract. Now that we're in breach of contract, there's a penal clause that comes in those two chapters, Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, come into play. Yep, they come into play. So, he said, from the time I brought you up out of Egypt to this day, you have forsaken me and served other gods. So we're out here practicing the law of California. We're practicing the law of Florida. We're practicing the law of Australia, Canada, England, France. We're not practicing the law of God. We're practicing the law of our gods. We are electing our own kings. And he told us not to do that. And so there's going to be a penal clause event take place here. I don't know just when. I'm not a prophet. I'm just a reporter. If I was a prophet, I'd probably be able to tell you, you know, about when the event's going to take place. If you were to ask me to guess, I'd say, well, certainly within 10 years, probably less than that. I don't think that we can get away with what we've been getting away with for very much longer just reading USA Today. In verse 9, he went on to say, "Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." So he said, now you go out and tell them that they're making a mistake here, making this change. You see, boys and girls, when you change your king, you change your law. When you change your law, you change your king. Are you really sure that you want to do this? Because if you do this, there's going to be some repercussions, you know. So he told Samuel, go out and tell him the manner of the king that's going to rule over you. And Samuel told all the words of the Eternal unto the people that asked of him a king. Then he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. Your king will take your sons and appoint them for himself and for his chariots and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. Now you're going to have a military draft. And this king now is going to go to war, and you guys are going to have to go out here and fight to make the world safe for Standard Oil, Exxon, and Chevron, and the rest of these oil companies. Verse 12, he said he's going to appoint him captains over thousands, captains over fifties, and he'll set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. You people are going to end up in the military-industrial complex, and you're going to be working over here for wages, paying taxes. And verse 13, he goes on, he says, and he's going to take your daughters to be confectionaries and cooks and to be bakers. He's going to take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards and even the best of them and give it to his servants. He's going to take the tenth of your seed. You're going to have an income tax. And you're going to have eminent domain now if you do this. Are you sure you want income tax, eminent domain, military-industrial complex? You want military conscription? Now, you know, these are choices that everybody has to make. And when our forefathers were faced with this choice, you know, this is the biggest geopolitical move in the history of Israel. And we made it. He's going to take the tenth of your seed, that's your income tax, and your vineyards, and give it to his officers and servants. And he's going to take your men servants and maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work. And he's going to take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And in verse 18, he says, you're going to cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you in your elections. You're going to choose this king, Barack Obama. And the Lord will not hear you in that day. Now, when you guys cry out to me and say, hey, hey, save us from this, he says, I will not hear you. So when I have a student come in here and he says, well, what are you going to do about this political problem in Washington? I said, well, you can pray to Jesus until you want to, but he said he ain't going to listen to you. So I don't tell my students to pray to Jesus to save us from Barack Obama at all, because we made this choice. Our forefathers made this choice. And we had this king until King George III, and then we rebelled against King George. You Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders didn't do that. You guys were smart enough not to add insult to injury. But we Americans, you know, we said, hey, listen, you can take this King George and stick him where there's no daylight too. So if you want to talk about rebellious and stiff-necked people, we're all rebellious and stiff-necked. But we Americans stand out among all the rest of you Israelites like there is no comparison. None. We not only give God the finger, we give our king the finger. We give everybody the finger. Well, our God has said now, you know, I'm not going to listen to this, you know, when you cry out to me. And in verse 19, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, nay, but we will have a king over us. Now, remember, he said back here in verse 9, he said, go protest solemnly to them. Tell them the errors of their ways and tell them, hey, this isn't going to work out very well for you. And the people said, nevertheless, we will have a king over us. Now, in modern times, you know, we say that's just giving him the finger. And I wanted to report this to you because this is an important story. This is a story you're never going to hear in church. And, you know, that isn't going to happen. I don't even think your preacher knows anything about geopolitics and ancient history. But even if he did, he wouldn't tell you the story. It doesn't fit in with evolution. It doesn't fit in with the Bible. It doesn't fit in with grace, faith, and religion. And I'm not discounting grace and faith. I'm just telling you that grace and faith have a place, but they're being overplayed. And they're just being overplayed. And the Ten Commandments and the politics and the covenant and the contract and the penal clause to the contract, you know, is about to come due, and this is going to be nasty, really nasty. Now, we're headed into depression. We're headed into hyperinflation. We're headed into more wars. I mean, you can just bank on it. You're going to have a collapse in your economy. If you think you got bad unemployment now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Depression's coming on top of that. And then, like as not, every time this happens to us, then it stops raining and we have dust bowls and then we have even worse problems. And I just thought I would report this ahead of time over here because some of you guys out there might wake up and say, hey, maybe I don't want to do that. Now, I'm not here to encourage you. See, I'm a little different than the average preacher. See, I'm not here saying, won't you give your heart to Jesus today and repent? And come down the sawdust trail and join the church and pay your tithes so that I can make a lot of money and retire in Switzerland. No, I'm not asking for your money here, kids. I don't need it. I'm not asking for it. I don't really care whether you do this or not. I'm not here to tell you what to do. Hell, I hardly know what to do myself. I know what I'm not going to do. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do, but I do know what I'm not going to do. And this 10-plank model, I'm going to quit that one right away. I did that some years back. I'm going to get off this communist crap because that didn't pay off well for me at all. And I don't think it's going to pay off very well for you either. Now, he finishes this off here in verse 20. He says, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. Hell, we want to go to war in Vietnam. We want to go to war in Iraq, Afghanistan, Germany. I mean, we like this war thing. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them in the ears of the Eternal. And the Eternal said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice and make them a king. And Samuel said unto the men of Israel, go every man into your city. So we're going to make you a king. And they did. Now, we've had this king thing, you know, from that day until 1776. And then we got bummed out with King George. And then we threw him out. And then we put in our own government. We had a republic until about 1865. Then we decided we needed to change that to a democracy. And we did. Then we got on this democracy thing until about 1913. Then we decided that we needed a communist proletariat, and so we enacted the Federal Reserve System. Then we elected our first dictator. That was Franklin D. Roosevelt. From 1933 to this day, we have not had a choice in who's going to be president. And you're not going to have any choice in this upcoming election. You can vote for a Republican or a Democrat who have the exact same agenda. There is one bright spot in this electoral process. We can choose our master. But boys and girls, you're going to have a master, whether you like it or not. And then, when it's all said and done, when you get tired of this, and when you are really hurting, when you're unemployed and you've lost your house and your car and you don't know where you're going to go next, and you're going to be real excited and you're going to go to church and you're going to pray hard, real hard to Jesus. And he said, you'll cry out to me in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen over you. You see, boys and girls, that's democracy. That's us voting. That's us choosing our king. Now remember, the law said God would choose our king. And we said, oh no, we're not going to have that either. We're going to choose our own. So we rejected our God, then we rejected our king, and now we've got our dictator, And now we're going to cry out to God, and he says, when you do, I'm not going to hear you. And that's called the Great Tribulation, and that's coming upon us over here. So I thought I would report that to you up front so that you'd know what's coming, and when it happens, then you'll know who to blame. And that's because we are the proximate cause of our own injury.